The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Nothing like it.
I'm not going to lie. I got goosebumps.
Yeah, this is special. Wow.
See, the other part is, guys, like, I've been fortunate to play against the Knicks in the final. The one thing when you're a Spur and you come in here or you're a Rocket, your favorite people are rooting against you.
Look at Johnny.
That is a different feeling.
President Trump back at the White House this morning after making headlines at Madison Square Garden in New York last night. By the way, he's the first sitting president to attend an NBA Finals game. Reaction was pretty mixed last night. There were boos during the national anthem. But there were also chants of USA coming from the crowd.
And the NYPD.
As well as some fights with police. We'll see what the next game has in store. Marcus Espinosa live in New York. Thank you, sir.
See what the next game has in store. Everything in America these days, it's a spectacle. The whole world is watching. Really embarrassing. And what a contrast to see the practical worship of New York City, Madison Square Garden, sports, the celebrity culture. And then it runs parallel with all of the violence and the crime and the evil and the danger. Perilous times, as the Apostle Paul said in 2 Timothy 3:1. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us for today's show. You can get to the live video stream at our website, thetrumpet.com, or the Rumble channel, or the YouTube channel. Lots to get to on today's show. As I was saying to the news gatherers earlier, this is exactly the way the devil would want to frame the scene, the event in New York City. You heard the announcer there at the start. There's no place I'd rather be. I mean, this is the Big Apple. This is New York City. The whole city is on fire for the Knicks. And then Madison Square Garden. That is the most famous arena in the world. And it's been 50 some years for the Knicks. They couldn't be more excited. And it couldn't be more violent. We'll see what the next game has in store for us. As I was saying earlier, I think win or lose in this series, one thing you can expect after it's over is some violence in New York City. Even the game itself. I mean, some could argue that the violence you saw there was maybe the game, not so much the post-game reaction. Even President Trump commented on just how rough and physical the NBA is getting. it makes me think of the joke when I was younger about going to a fight and a hockey game breaks out. It's becoming the same with all of the sports. President Trump was asked about his exchange with the NBA commissioner. This was on the tarmac after the game, which he attended, as you heard there, in the cold open. But here's how that went down. Clip 12.
The game
what did Commissioner Silver
just talk about? He came over to pay his respects. You know, as president, he came over. And we talked a little bit about the NBA and about the game and the game's change. I said, it's gotten rougher, which is a good thing, not a bad thing. It's gotten rougher. When you look at the way they guard people now, I don't remember them doing that 10 years ago. And he knows a lot about basketball, but it's good. It's good for the game.
You think the NBA
it's a tougher game.
It's pretty interesting to just think about the difference in 10 years. Even for this man, he used to go to Madison Square Garden all the time and sit right there on the front row and the whole crowd would cheer for him. That was just a little over 10 years ago. Now, even during the national anthem, you have to boo Donald Trump loudly. It was a mixed reaction, but still, you're in New York City. I mean, it's NBA basketball. This is from MS Now. Look at how they reveal themselves, really. I mean, what has changed in these past 10, 11 years? Most significantly, lots of things have changed, for sure. The game has changed. Says there was a time when Donald Trump's presence at the world's most famous arena wasn't just welcome, it was trumpeted. In that not too distant past, Trump, who was born in Queens, was part of Manhattan's fabric. A New Yorker through and through. Donald, Donald, the fans called as he rounded the glass partition of the hockey rink where the New York Rangers played. It was 1999, Wayne Gretzky's last season. The Apprentice was 5 years away. The White House, not even a glint in Trump's eyes. When he shook hands and nodded knowingly to the Madison Square Garden masses, they felt happy that their rich and famous neighbor acknowledged them. But Monday night, as President Trump smiled broadly and saluted while the Star Spangled Banner blared and his image was shown to masses on the big screen for almost 8 seconds before Game 3, heckling, jeering from every part of the arena was focused like a beam of white-hot, angry light into New York Knicks owner James Dolan's luxury suite where Trump stood. Yesterday, we talked about sound-mindedness and high-mindedness. More and more, you don't see sound minds. You see a lot of high-mindedness. This morning, I was reading a previous article, or it was not too old, a couple months ago. My father wrote, going through John 13, about being happy. Christ telling the disciples, if you wash one another's feet, if you humble yourselves, you'll be happy. And my father said the reason we don't have the happiness and the joy is because we're too vain and arrogant. There's too much high-mindedness, in other words. So the crowd spills over into the streets last night, and you saw what happened. This is about to explode. It's a tinderbox. You see it in every sector of society. You see it internationally with wars and rumors of wars. You see it with the knife crime in the UK. There's a terrorist just yesterday, or maybe this morning, I don't know which, tried to behead a British citizen in Belfast. We'll get to that in a minute. And this is not an isolated case. There was a knife attack in Manchester as well. They had to shut down a school. What's it going to take? I was thinking earlier, what's it going to take for just ordinary British citizens to stand up for themselves? To fight back. I'm not suggesting answering violence with violence is the solution to all of this. But you can't just lay down and let someone stab you to death. Not in today's world. It's amazing that they're not beating down the door at 10 Downing Street. considering how little it takes for other nations or other religions to take to the streets in rioting. One tiny incident in one case and in another case, it all shows the sickness and the high-mindedness of our people, of our nations. Sin is the cause. Sin is the root cause. Just, hey, bring them all in. Sudan, Somalia, invite them in, and don't really crack down on them for carrying around knives. Just go after the white British people. Another foreigner brandishing a knife in Britain, right in the middle of a neighborhood, right in the middle of a street, trying to behead the victim who's in critical condition. If I was New York City, I'd be a little concerned about game four and about the end of the series, even if they win. There's going to be some violence and looting. That's my prediction. That's New York City. Mr. Livingston reminded me of the big deal that it was for Oklahoma City fans last year to tease, I forget the star's name from Indiana. His dad was on hand wearing his Indiana Pacers jersey for the finals. And the media tried to blow that up into this violent confrontation and how OKC fans are horrible. No city is perfect. But what we're looking at in New York City, and again, here is exactly the way the devil would want to frame it. You're in the greatest city in the world. You're at the greatest arena in the world. There is no place I'd rather be. Well, I disagree with that. I wouldn't want to be in New York City after a game like that. I wouldn't want to take to the streets. It's easy for those million-dollar, you know, announcers with their private security detail exiting the arena and their private exit, you know, with their limousine ride waiting outside, probably bulletproof these days. But what about ordinary people who are just walking down the streets of Belfast and attacked by a knife-wielding terrorist that Britain just invited in? A tinderbox. The intensity of the Garden's displeasure did not wane even when Trump's granddaughter Kai was shown behind him. The president smiled and saluted throughout his cameo as if he were impervious to the crowd that likely wished he had picked some other garden party to crash. So this is MS now exposing itself. Why 10, 12 years ago would they rise to their feet and trumpet the arrival of Donald Trump? And why is it so starkly different today? Why is there so much hatred and animosity today? Well, in large part because of MS Now and other outlets like that. They hate Donald Trump. They hate what he stands for politically. They hate the MAGA movement. And they've been known, by the way, the legacy media, to encourage violence, to encourage mayhem and looting and burning. They did it in the St. Floyd riots, 2020. I mean, that period, just, it's like it ripped the Band-Aid off of our society, and we were fully exposed for how hateful and vain and high-minded we are. Encouraging, promoting violence. The truth of it is, Donald Trump hasn't changed much since he visited Madison Square Garden 12 years ago. You can look at clips from 20 or 30 years ago, what he said about China, what he said about Iran, what he said about us getting ripped off abroad. And then you get to his campaign in 2016, and he said so many of the same things, but he came down the escalator the year before as a Republican. And that is unforgivable. In the eyes of a very left-wing professional sports association, in the eyes of a very left-wing, radical leftist New York City. And of course, all the left-wing leaders in that city. It's one of the most, let's be honest, it's one of the most corrupt, dangerous cities in the world. And yet we celebrate it. We declare our sin as Sodom. We love it. We love it. The millionaires love it. They lined the courtside seats. The million-dollar announcers, they love it. They get goosebumps. This is from The Hill. Border czar Tom Homan on Monday said New York City was about to see its largest deployment of immigration and customs enforcement officers in response to Governor Hochul's recent legislative package that provides residents with added protections from federal authorities. It's an immigration war. Tom Homan squaring off against Governor Hochul, who wants to protect the illegals, let them roam the streets, let them roam the streets with knives if you're in Britain. And then ICE agents that are trying to get rid of them. I'm keeping my promise. We're going to send more ICE agents to New York because you took away the efficiencies of safe arrests in county jails, said Homan. The package signed by Hochul last month bans law enforcement officers from wearing masks and prevents state and local law enforcement from engaging in civil immigration enforcement. It prevents ICE from engaging in immigration enforcement. And the spirit, the same spirit is there in Britain. Just let them roam the streets. Just let them have their way. Just if you noticed in that cold open, here are all these thugs beating on each other. And then right at the end of that footage, you had a line of police officers just standing there and watching it, I guess. I guess that's how you keep the city safe. Just let the violence play out. Just let it run its course. I forget the phrase from Baltimore, that mayor some years ago, when there's all this violence on the streets of Baltimore. And she told the law enforcement officers to stand down. Just let it play out. Let it play out. That's almost what the British neighbors did with the guy that was about to be beheaded. People are terrified. You think of the prophecies about, 10 thugs sending 1,000 people to flight. This is where we are. People are terrified. There's no good Samaritans. It's too dangerous. And so they're over there saying, hey, stop it. Leave them alone. And finally, someone comes with a shovel or a spade or something and starts beating the terrorist. And maybe, just maybe, it'll save the life of the victim who had his neck and face slashed. We'll see. This is from GB News, I think, clip one.
Now, a man is seriously injured in hospital after being stabbed repeatedly in the neck in North Belfast late last night.
Police were called at around 10:30, where officers arrested another man in connection with the incident.
Some horrific speculation about this attack, some people calling it an attempted beheading.
Well, I was probably the only mainstream media crew on the ground here last night. I arrived at just about 11 o'clock. That attack took place at 25 past 10. And I can tell you the scenes here were chaotic at that stage. What the ambulance service had to deal with at that point must have been quite disturbing. Last night, you could feel the anger in the community over the amount of immigration that has came into this area and put real stress and pressures on facilities that are here.
We're just hearing from the police now. They are saying that the alleged attacker is believed to be Somalian and in his 30s, and the alleged victim has significant injuries to his face, neck and back.
I'm afraid we live in a very dangerous time when it comes to the whole question of immigration and people's attitude.
A very dangerous time. He's right about that. We just had the story last week. I forget, was it Southampton? It happened in December. The trial just concluded. The police, they arrive on the scene and they side with the perpetrator. They side with the terrorist. They side with the knife-wielding Sikh who said, hey, he pulled my turban off. And the guy's lying, the victim's lying in his own blood, saying, I've been stabbed. And they're handcuffing him and reading him his rights. At least that didn't happen this time. At least there were a few neighbors, almost too late, but at least there were a few neighbors that intervened. Genesis 6:13. And God said to Noah, the end of all flesh is come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth. The earth was just filled with violence. And yet, you know, in Noah's time, I'm sure there were commentators or celebrities that said, hey, there's no place I'd rather be. I love this world. I love what we celebrate in this world. God says, pray thy kingdom come. Let that be the way you start your prayers. We are longing for and yearning for the kingdom of God, and we mourn the death of nations. We sigh and cry, seeing how miserable and unhappy people are. This footage, by the way, it's all blurred out. It goes for about 50 seconds, so you don't see violence, but it's horrific nonetheless. So if you've got little ones, make sure you either turn the show off for a moment or put them in the other room. But we felt like it was necessary to show it. Clip 6.
Mom's dead. He still killed him. Hurry up.
He's dead. He's completely dead.
Yeah, no, he's not.
No, he's not.
Dad, I don't understand. Oh, no.
Has he got knife?
Yeah. Get off him, you f***ing rat. Yo!
He's trying to cut his head off, isn't he? Hurry up.
Hurry up!
He's slicing his hair off here. Hurry up!
And of course, the headlines this morning in the UK, they're in quotes, attempted beheading. The videos all over social media, pretty sure that's an actual beheading or an attempt. It's not an actual beheading unless he dies, you know, partial beheading, whatever you want to call it. But let's remove the scare quotes. Let's call it what it is. Those newscasters that some of them can't even show it on their news programs, but they saw it. What is happening? What a contrast. The world of make-believe, it's great. There's nowhere I'd rather be. And then you see what's actually happening to people all over the world. As I say, this is not an isolated incident. You've got the stabbing in Manchester. Same time. And then the one that happened, as we talked about last week. There's another one. Tommy Robinson just tweeted it out. This gal down in Australia, stabbed by 4 foreigners, 60-some times stabbed to death in that case. The Telegraph says, the suspect has been arrested on suspicion of attempted murder after the victim in his 40s suffered significant injuries to his face, neck, and back. Footage shared on social media, which is too graphic to publish, appears to show the suspect in his 30s pinning the man to the ground before stabbing him in the head several times. When is this going to blow over? Sorry, when is it going to blow up? A lot of these things have been blowing over for too long. It's heading toward civil war. Here in the States, in the UK, the seeds have been planted. And it's prophesied. Read Ezekiel 4 and 5. See where this is headed. The sickness goes from head to toe, as Isaiah 1 says. And you know what else Isaiah says? It says there's no soundness. Just to follow on what we talked about yesterday. There's no sound-mindedness. It's just sickness through and through. And it doesn't take much to set it off where it's just openly violent. It can be a, you know, a devastating defeat in the sports world. It can be a tremendous victory. Doesn't take much. Play this from Talk TV, clip two.
We are going to be talking more about that horrific stabbing and what appears to be an attempted beheading in Belfast last night. The suspect has been arrested on suspicion of attempted murder and is in police custody. And the man who was the victim of that horrific, horrific attack is in a serious condition in hospital. This is not a happy news day, folks. Co-op Academy School in Manchester went into lockdown this morning after three people were stabbed in a serious incident. Six police cars were at the scene in Blackley, along with a helicopter hovering above as an ambulance treated victims. Students sheltered in their classrooms, parents said, as police responded to the incident.
We were talking earlier about the fact that people feel that this country is getting worse and more dangerous despite the statistics. This is why, right? I don't think there's ever been a point in British history when I was growing up, or maybe when you had several of these nationally significant knife attacks.
I don't remember any of these things, and I was involved in news. I was always interested in news.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Like this sort of attack, like day after day after day, two on the same day, two in the same morning, right? I don't think that happened before.
I don't remember any stabbings at schools either.
I was wondering this morning, there's some quotes at the end of my notes, which I probably won't get to, but I was just thinking, what would Winston Churchill, if he were prime minister right now, what would he think about this? And then what would he do to combat it, to confront it? Here in New York City, you've got Governor Hochul trying to protect illegal immigrants. And you've got ICE. They're ramping up their numbers so that they can enforce the law. And so you've got the government squaring off with the government. This is from the Irish Mirror, clip 8.
It was horrific to watch. It's almost difficult to comprehend the barbarity of this attack, that there was a man pinned on the ground. He seemed to be in a helpless state, and yet he was continuing to be attacked with a knife by a man who had him pinned down. You can hear other residents shouting and telling him to stop attacking him.
There's a prophecy I'm just highlighting here in my notes. Ezekiel 7, verse 23. Make a chain. The land is full of bloody crimes, and the city is full of violence. I'm sure in Britain they celebrate Belfast as well as Manchester and Liverpool. These are all the famous cities with the big football clubs. Birmingham, of course, London. Here in the States, New York City. There's no place I'd rather be. This is another one from Talk TV, clip 9.
Horrific attack in Belfast last night. The details, even just describing the details, is pretty too much information at this time of day. It's grim, it's upsetting, it's arguably one of the worst things we have seen, and it's thrown up an awful lot of questions about everything from immigration to those that carry knives and those that are willing to use it to attack.
Absolutely. I mean, the video is so graphic that we can't even really show it on this channel. Societal breakdown is something that has been an overarching theme of the news cycle this year. But really, it seems like it's come to a head with the last few weeks, you know, when you've got stabbings, murders, but it just seems like it's problem after problem and violence. Violence is so rampant now.
That's Genesis 6:13, and you can frame it any way you want. You can say it's great, that this is the greatest city on earth, or this is the greatest arena on earth. But what is the reality? Yesterday, I just spoke about living in a fantasy world, and it's on both sides of the aisle politically. My father wrote in 2019, this was at the Trumpet, Well, actually, I can skip that because it leads into the prophecy in Ezekiel 7, which I just mentioned, that chain of bloody crimes. But let's play clip 11.
The downplaying of this in, well, politically anyway, we know that's going to happen. The BBC, you know, the way they reported, man taken to hospital with serious injuries after Belfast stabbing. What we saw there was clearly, and as someone shouted on the video, an attempted beheading. That's a very different thing from a stabbing.
Yeah, and this is what is leading to the pure cold rage, frankly, that tens of millions of British citizens are feeling about the way we're being treated by the authorities. We're not stupid. We've got eyes. We've got ears. We know what's going on. And we can tell when information is being withheld from us.
Listen to one clip from my father's Key of David program. And he's talking about Ephraim in particular, the British people coming from the tribe of Ephraim. You can study more into that if you'd like to order United States and Britain in Prophecy. But this was a Key of David show from back in 2012, clip 10.
Judgment, mercy, and faith. God wants judgment first ahead of mercy and faith. Now, if you have a lack of good judgment, it's going to wreck your mercy even. And you see all the time that we get that mercy ahead of judgment. And we have all kinds of problems in our societies because we let criminals grow and the criminals that commit fraud and violence and even murder, and oftentimes they get very little punishment because, well, we want to show mercy to them. But you'd better have judgment first, or you're going to be showing a lot of mercy that is beyond what you should be showing. That's what's going to happen. And that is what's happening in our society. Notice what it says in verse 11. Ephraim, or again, this is specifically talking to Britain, but it also includes three nations here. Ephraim is oppressed. In other words, they extort from people by fraud and violence. Why do they do that? Well, Ephraim is oppressed and corrupt in that way and broken in judgment, because he willingly walked after the commandment. So here is the problem. They're broken in judgment. Three nations have that problem in this end time.
Three nations in particular. Two, I think, we should draw attention to. Ephraim and Manasseh, America and Britain. Because in the case of little Israel, Judah, at least they're going after Hezbollah. And they'd like to finish the job in Iran, but the president in Manasseh won't let him do that. Notice, too, how the theme in Israelite nations is that you've got to go after the individual or the nation that's defending itself. That's what happened with Henry Nowak. The police showed up, and they sided with the criminal. They sided with the murderer. And even on that point with mercy and judgment, to see this wall of police officers just standing there watching the melee, watching the fighting, watching the punching. Well, we got to show mercy. We just got to let it play out. It'll die down. Where's the judgment? That's the one big difference, really. If you think about the time period that Winston Churchill was prime minister compared to today, there is no judgment. That's because it's broken. Broken judgment. Well, we've got to be merciful with the Somalis, with the Pakistanis, with the rape gangs, with the knife-wielding Sikhs, with the thugs on the street of New York City. Just let them do what they're going to do. Well, we're seeing what happens when you take that approach. The Henry Nowak footage, we played that for you last week. It perfectly typifies what we're seeing with little Israel. How can they, after October 7 of all things, how can they be the evildoer, the aggressor, the one instigating violence? No, there people are having to evacuate northern Israel because of the nonstop attacks coming from Hezbollah. And then here comes Iran using Hezbollah as leverage. And basically President Trump siding with Iran. Well, listen, they're only sending those ballistic missiles that happen to be the size of a bus, by the way. They're only firing them at Tel Aviv because of what you're doing in Hezbollah. So dial it back. And Bibi, for his part, is saying, look, we're just defending ourselves. There's a knife-wielding Sikh, so to speak, coming after us. What do you want us to do? It all has to be so measured. It's just like the guy, Henry Nowak again. Did you pull his turban? Did you say something that was racially insensitive? Because maybe you deserve the knife attack. Maybe you deserve to be stabbed. That's the message, even if it's just implied. So they lob these ballistic missiles into Tel Aviv, and then President Trump, the way he's related it, I said, okay, if you're going to lob some back, I'd rather you not fire back at all. If you're going to lob any back, just a few, and then both of you dial it down, let's make a deal. What is that? What message does that send to a knife-wielding terrorist? Because that's what Iran is, grown large. And it's coming after you. It's trying to kill you. What are you supposed to do? What should you do? What should your neighbors do? A world filled with violence. Genesis 6:13. You can rave about how beautiful it is, how wonderful the city is, how great the arena is, how incredible the sport is. But what's the truth? What's reality? This was President Trump speaking about Iran after the game last night, clip 3.
We have ongoing negotiations in Iran and with Iran that hasn't stopped. And we could have at least an idea by 1 or 2 days from now, but I think it's going well.
What did you say to Prime Minister Netanyahu?
We had a very good conversation, and he was hit, and he hit back. And I can't blame him for that, but he was hit. He hit back, and now they've called it quits, so they're going to just leave each other alone for another week or something. It's been going on for a long time. You could say about 3,000 years, if you really want, but certainly it's been going on for 47 years. But no, he hit back. They were going back and forth, and now they both agreed through me to stop. And we're in the final throes of what will be a very, very good deal that will not allow in any way, shape, or form nuclear weapons, etc. And the strait will open up right away. It'll open up immediately upon signing, which could be in 2 or 3 days.
A very, very good deal. We're going to sign it in 2 or 3 days. There has been violence for 3,000 years, but we'll leave that aside. There's no place that I'd rather be than at the negotiating table with the knife-wielding terrorist. It's going to be very, very good. You wonder sometimes if these people or their advisors are listening to themselves, are listening to the many contradictions. Because we've heard from the same administration about eternal peace breaking out. That happened last year. Did you know this? Eternal? This is clip 4.
I said, do what's right, but I want you to stop as quickly as you can. Because they have to stop. It's had to do with Lebanon, and it has to stop. We want to get it finished. We're very close to having a very, very good, strong, powerful deal. If we go and bomb, which we can do very easily if we want, and we spend another 2 or 3 weeks bombing, they'll have nothing left whatsoever, but you won't have the strait open for months. If we do the bombing, you know, a lot of people are going to be killed. Who wants to do that? I don't. And we'll have a signed document that's actually stronger than doing the bombing.
The document, the signed document, the peace pact, it's actually going to be stronger. than going in for unconditional surrender. That's delusional, sorry to say. But again, looking at the spirit in the air, Israel is defending itself. Israel didn't, they didn't launch this operation on October 6th, 2023, and march into Gaza City. What would the world have reacted to had they had they done this? Think about the reaction. Israel didn't send Jews into Gaza City to rape and pillage and burn and murder and take hostages. No, Hamas did that in the other direction. All of those Israeli cities, kibbutzim that I visited some time ago, and all of these makeshift memorials for dead Israelis, Israeli women that were raped multiple times, disfigured, dismembered, stabbed to death, babies, children, women, men, all of the old people, just indiscriminate murder and raping and beheadings. And the attacker in Belfast last night, he was just trying to cut the head off of a British citizen. But we've got to just stop the violence on both sides, sign a piece of paper, because who wants to kill the murderer? That's really what President Trump is saying there. Just lay down the weapons on both sides. And, you know, as history shows us, one side will do it for a short period if it gets a temporary ceasefire. Israel knows, though. Netanyahu knows. If Israel were to do that in the north of Israel, next to Lebanon, or with Iran, it's only a matter of time before the knife-wielding terrorist strikes first. Israel is defending itself. Ordinary citizens, in Britain in particular, certainly with respect to the stories we've spotlighted over the last week, but to some degree in America too. Governor Hochul says just let them all in and keep ICE out. ICE is the problem. The federal government is the problem. What kind of world is it when you see the leaders in Ephraim and Manasseh rise in defense of the aggressor, the killer, the murderer, and single out the one who's defending their life or their nation as the problem? Melanie Phillips says this: other media have also been presenting Israel falsely as the aggressor rather than defending itself against Iran, which has been using Hezbollah to attack Israel. It's business as usual. The truly wicked media distortions which present Israel falsely as evil rather than the target of real, unadulterated evil, and which have done so much to fuel murderous hatred against Israel and the Jewish people. Israel is the problem. The victims are the problem. Listen to this from Vice President Vance recently, clip 5.
Obviously, we've been very involved in these negotiations, Jesse. We're going to take the attitude of accomplish the president's mission, but verify over the long term that the Iranians are keeping their end of the bargain. It's a tall order, but it's one that the president has put us in a good position to achieve. Because let's be honest, Jesse, the Iranians don't want this war to continue. It's not in their best interest. And I think they're coming to the table, putting some real things on the table. We're, of course, going to verify it. But if we get to this deal, it's going to be a home run win for the American people.
It's amazing how certain or sure of themselves and their opinions they are. It's going to be a home run. It's going to be an awesome deal. The Iranians, they don't want war. They're a peace-loving people. My father wrote in April 2026, this was the trumpet just recently, God wants us to trust him. Not only individually, he also wants our nations to trust him. If you're going to trust God, you must trust him completely. You can see the title of this piece. World War III will start with Iran. That's what we're dealing with here. The nation that's going to trigger, I mean, there are people, obviously. There's peace-loving people in Iran. But they're being ruled by radical Islamists. And they just get more and more radical with each passing year. They're going to start World War III. It says you can't be halfway about it, just invoking his name, God's name that is, or offering up a few token prayers and expect him to protect and deliver you. Half-heartedness is not going to cut it with God, whether it's with respect to religion or whether it's with respect to fighting the number one state sponsor of terrorism. You can't go halfway and then say, okay, everybody just drop everything and let's sign this deal. It's going to be a home run. What would Winston Churchill think about that reasoning? To say nothing of what God would think. Listen to this quote. Our world has chosen the way of warfare instead of full trust in God. And if you're going to war in this evil world, you had better go all the way. So it's obvious that we're not looking to God for protection. We're not trusting God. We're not trusting God 100%, not even 1%. So then, as my father says, if you're just going to go the way of this world, if you're just going to war like they do in this world, you better go all the way. You better eliminate the perpetrator. You better eliminate the attacker. It says, weakness in a world full of beasts will get you killed. That's what we're living in. And you can talk all day long about, there's no place I'd rather be than in Madison Square Garden. And also, you know, in my apartment or my posh hotel, which has 24-hour security. You can talk about that as long as you want, but we're living in a world full of beasts. That's what my father wrote in the April issue. And they prey on weakness. They prey on weakness. My father wrote in 2019, this is a Royal Vision article, talking about the lion has roared, Amos chapter 3. It says, when you see what is happening in the nations of Israel, how can you not prophesy? How can you know all that God has revealed and keep quiet? I had a scripture blitz. I don't even know if I got to it on this program. I just saw it in a search the other day. It's from a couple months ago. It's in my TD notes. Just all the verses, one after another, after another, after another, describing life in the last days. And when you read all those verses, if you're thinking the right way, your reaction is not going to be, hey, there's nowhere else I'd rather be than right here in this world. Well, where we would rather be is in God's world, God's kingdom. That's why Jesus said, first thing on the prayer list, thy kingdom come. Well, after you hallow God's name, after you praise God, after you thank God, after you thank God for his truth, after you tell God how much you appreciate having your mind open to the truth, then you pray with energy, with fervency. You pray, your kingdom come. I've had enough of Satan's kingdom. The nations of this world need your government. They need your family government. They need your godly rule. They need your laws. They need the Ten Commandments. They need the law of love. They need God's family. My father says here, the world is getting sicker and sicker. Those who don't have God's hope just want to escape. They have their sports and entertainment. Let me just say that again. Those who don't have God's hope, they just want to escape. Escape into the world of entertainment, sports. One of my news gatherers just sent me this article from Herbert Armstrong, 1985. I can zip through some of it quickly. When our work of God was only about 2 years underway or three in Eugene, Oregon, we just got had a program play this past weekend that we filmed in Eugene. He's talking about some of the early days, some of the early converts that came into the Philadelphia era of God's church. He says, I found the need of something relaxing, something to get my mind for a little while off these serious problems and this driving activity. My wife Loma and I found a total change mentally in attending occasional basketball games at the University of Oregon. It says, at the time, the University of Oregon had a team of sophomores and one senior that looked like an up-and-comer. I mean, this was a big team back in the 1930s, almost 100 years ago. And sure enough, in their senior year, these boys went on to win the first national championship. It says, at such games, one will see thousands being thrilled by scintillating play. Are these basketball fans enjoying life? If you ask them at the moment, the answer might be, you bet. Are they bored? Not during the excitement of the game. Do they feel a sort of mental, emotional, or spiritual hunger? Not during the thrill of a game. No, they're on top of the world, especially when you win the championship. It's exhilarating. He says, but after the game, then what? Well, that's a good question. That's something a lot of people should have been asking last night, by the way. There's no place I'd rather be. Madison Square Garden, baby. Well, what about after the game? What happened after the game was over? He says, why, after the game is over and the fans have gone home, do they experience a letdown until the next game or the next experience of some pleasure? I got to wondering, after the game, I don't experience any letdown. I don't have to suffer the experience of emptiness, boredom, or this sort of soul hunger, whatever it is, until the next exciting entertainment. He says, as a matter of fact, I find my life interesting, invigorating, stimulating, satisfying, and abundant at all times. It is tremendously exciting at times. It's never boring, never dull, never discontented. Why? What's the difference? One final bit. He says, I know what's the difference. I want to tell you what it is. The answer is bound up in the questions I asked at the beginning of this article. I have learned what man is. I've learned why God brought us into existence. I have learned about our purpose. I've learned about God's purpose. I've learned that God is reproducing himself. I've learned that God is a family. I've learned about the spectacular return of Jesus Christ to this earth. I've learned about God's law of love. I've learned about what it means to repent toward God, to bury the old man, and to walk in newness of life. I've learned what it means to be new, to be spiritually minded, not high-minded, to be sound-minded, to look to God, totally trusting in my Creator. When we learn those things, that's how you sustain that happiness that Jesus spoke of in John 13. Humbling ourselves before the mighty hand of God and then filling up on the life of Jesus Christ through the Spirit of God, the mind of God, the power of God, the life of God. That's all we have time for on today's show. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.